Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Tzadi Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Vov. If you prefer, 2 lines before they get wide. Before we read the Gemara text, allow your eye to notice some of the markings. The first marking that we encounter is a double underline, one of our series markings. You will then see a house marking and triangles. On the side of the Gemara, just to map out things and provide a bit of an introduction, you'll notice the double underline, and we've written under our Nosei slash Mivneh, Nosei topic heading, Mivneh structural note, the following. The double underline is Hityachasut Shel Rava, Rava's attention toward the issue of L'shevach Acharei Gzela, improvement to an item that was part of a theft, improvement to that item after the theft. The discussion, of course, is a continuation of ideas we've been seeing in our recent shiurim, certainly since the beginning of this perek. So if you're a first-time listener, by all means, familiarize yourself with the earlier dapim. The next marking we mentioned is the house marking. They represent she'elois Rava b'inyan, and our Rava will raise questions regarding this issue. And later, we'll see triangles. They represent shlavim, stages, kedei lahavin ma ha'she'la. Oftentimes, a question is asked, and it's not clear what is the question. So that we'll have several stages of analysis to figure out what the question was to begin with. Now the Gemara. Omar Rava, Gozal v'Hishbiach u'Mochar. A thief stole an item, improved the item, and then sold it. Gozal v'Hishbiach v'Hirish, or he stole an item, improved it, and then bequeathed it in an inheritance. Ma shishbiach mochar, ma shishbiach oyrish. That which he improved is sold. The sale goes through. And Rashi adds, very importantly, also based on our previous shiur, Rashi on the second line from the top, ma shishbiach mochar, the shokil lokeach mechzo shlishu revia. Someone bought an item that ultimately is going to be returned to the original owner. But the item that he bought was not exactly in the same state as it was when the original theft took place. The item purchased had improvement in it. That purchaser is entitled to a portion, to a percentage of the improvement, so that when he returns the item to the original owner, he will receive in compensation a percentage of the value of that improvement. What mechza, half of the value, shlish, a third of the value, or revia, a quarter of the value, depending on local practice. Rashi goes on, v'chein yoresh. Similarly, with regard to yoresh, inami kule shvacha. Another opinion, another possibility is that the purchaser or the heir will be entitled to the value of the entire improvement, kemas nisin, as we saw in the Mishnah, mitnei takonas hashovim, so as to encourage people to repent. Kidamoran liel b'shmaitzu kamaisa, as was spoken in the first sugya. The issue of mechza shishvia, in fact, we discussed in our previous Shion Daf Tzadi Hey. Let us continue in the Gemara. Boy Rava, now the questions start. Rava asks, Boy Rava, Hishpiach Lokeach Mahu. Notice in the two lines above where Rava stated his case, stated his point, the thief made the improvement. Here, the purchaser is making the improvement. So there's a stolen item that was sold and then improved by the purchaser. What is the din? Dasar Bosar de Ibaya, after the question was raised, Hoder Poshto, he then resolved it. Ma Mocha Rishon Lusheni, what did the first one sell to the second one? In other words, what did the thief sell to the purchaser? Called Schushit Avaliodo. Whatever benefit the thief may have had in it, that was transferred to the purchaser. So in the event that a thief made improvements in the stolen item, the thief, as we saw in our previous sugya, our previous shiur, the thief was entitled to a percentage of those improvements. So too, that option, that power, the schus, that merit that the thief had in the item, he transferred to the purchaser. So too, therefore, if the purchaser makes the improvement, and as we said, eventually we'll have to part with the stolen item, the purchaser is likewise entitled to a percentage of the value of that improvement. Boy Rava, Hishpiach Oivei Kichov Imahu. Here we just translate, no explanation, because the Gemara itself doesn't understand as of yet the question. Rava asks, Hishpiach Oivei Kichov, an idol worshipper made the improvement. Mahu, what is the din then? Amar Le Rav Acha Midifti Le Ravina. Rav Acha addresses Ravina regarding the question that Rava is raising. I can't understand the question at all. Takanta Le'evit Kechovim Neku V'nevad. Are we going to arise and provide special enactments for the benefit of idol worshippers? Omar Le, so Ravina answers, and again, I emphasize, we're proceeding here in stages. Omar Le, Lo Tzricha, the issue is raised, it's necessary to raise, Kigon de Zavne Le'Yisrael. So at this point, the understanding is a thief bought an item and sold it to a Jew. And the question then comes up concerning the improvement made by the thief. So we still ask, Habo machmas oived kechavim, harehu koived kechavim. This purchaser is coming on as a result of a purchase from an idolatrous thief. So whatever we say regarding the thief who's an idol worshipper, the same will apply to the one who purchased from him. So just like we said with regard to the idol worshipper thief who made improvements, we're not going to reckon with those improvements. So too, the purchaser from such a thief is not going to be entitled to compensation for those improvements. Lo, tzricha, no, this question still needs to be raised. Kagon, the Gozal Yisrael, originally a Jew, stole it. And just to make an allusion to the Rashi we saw before, when we're dealing with Jewish thieves, we try to do things to we make rabbinic enactments to encourage them to repent. And therefore, we speak about entitlements to a portion of improvement, etc. So in our issue, in the issue that Rava raised about Hishbiach Oivei Kechavim, the scenario really is like this. A Jewish thief is the original offender. V'zovna nihale, he then sold the item unto him, an idol worshipper, Hishbiach Oivei Kechavim, and the idol worshipper, who just happened to be a purchaser, he made the improvement. V'hodar oived kechavim v'zovna liYisrael, and then the item, the stolen item with its improvement, was then sold to a Jew. My, what is the din? Is this this stolen item eventually is going to be returned to the original owner with its improvement? So, what is the din regarding payment, compensation for those improvements? After all, the original owner didn't make the improvements. That was subsequent to the theft. And in this particular case, it's an idol worshipper that made the improvements. So what is the din, what is the law regarding compensation for the final purchaser, who happens to be a Jew? Me, Amrinon, do we say, Kevan de me, Kara Yisrael, Vahoda Yisrael, Avdi Rabbonan Takanta? Since it started off with a Jewish thief, and it ends up in the hands of a Jewish purchaser, the Rabbanan make their enactment of entitling a sharing in the value of those improvements. Oy Dilma. I say in sharing, meaning the purchaser has a right to a portion of those improvements. Oy Dilma. Or maybe Kevan de Ika Ivetichova Beemza, Lo Ovdu Le Rabbanan Takanta. Since there is an idol worshiper in the middle of this chain of events, the Rabbanan do not make an enactment to benefit the purchaser. Teku, this remains unresolved. Oma Rav Papa, and a new marking. So of course, we glance at the side where we see a bow tie featured. We also indicate that that this particular bow tie marking is going to continue till Omid Beis. So you'll note that we've numbered off, you might find four of these, in fact. You'll find four bow ties. Our note says, Davar shenigzal v'iveres shinuyim behadroga, an item that's stolen and then undergoes changes. Ma din hashinui b'chol shlav. What's the din? What's the law regarding the shinui? Nevarer im hashinui maspik choshuv loymar da'oisi shinui kaina. What we have to do is evaluate, is the change significant enough to constitute a change? And when we speak about significant changes, so of course that gets us involved with the topic of shinui kaine. The change is then grounds for your keeping the item and simply making a cash payment for the item before the change. Omar Rav Papa, Haiman de Gozal Dikla Mechavre. A person stole a palm tree from his friend Vikatle, and he cut it down. Even though he cut it down in the property of the owner and threw it into his own property, and it's now this cut palm tree is in the thief's property. Lo koni, there's no acquisition. Rashi says about halfway down the Rashi narrow lines. Lo koni lishlumi domi, he doesn't acquire it, which would thereby result in his simply paying a cash restitution. Rather, he returns the tree itself. There's no change in the name and the identity of the item. The Gemara continues. My time. Why do we say there's not lo koni, that there's no acquisition? Answer. Meikora diklo mikri vahashto nami diklo mikri. It originally was called a diklo, a palm tree, and now it's still referred to as a palm tree. The fact that it's cut down is not, in halachic terms, a significant enough change to warrant saying shinui kaine. Dikla the Ovid Guvi. A dikla was stolen, and it was made into Guvi. Rashi offers a French translation for that. We'll say on the side there's an expression chulios. Chulios would be the equivalent of discs, but that I don't think conveys the idea, but rather we'll say logs. So a decal was stolen, palm tree was stolen, and it was then sawed down into logs. In other words, the entire tree as a tree is called a tree, and then when it's sawed down into sections, we call them logs. So we say regarding this lo koni. Again, there's no acquisition that would enable the thief to keep the logs and simply pay cash. Hashto mias guvi de dikla mikri. Even now, they're simply called logs of the palm, so that the shinu Hashem, the change in name, didn't take place. The identity of it as being a palm remains. We continue. Guvi vavdinu kshuri. Let us say that logs were stolen, and the thief after stealing the logs, made them into kshuri. Kshuri will translate as beams. Kani, that is a means of acquisition on the part of the thief, and as a result, the thief will pay for the value of palm logs. Kshuri ravravi. A thief stole large beams. Ve'avdinu kshuri zutri, and made them into smaller beams. Lo kani, there's no acquisition. Because, I'm sure you can guess, it's still called beams. The size difference doesn't constitute grounds for shinui kani. I'm sure you're noticing the use of the squiggle underline at each point, whether it's lo kani or kani. We continue. Avdinu kitsusaisa kani. If the stolen beams were processed into boards, so then kani, that represents a change. Omar Rava, Haiman de Gaza Luliva Viabdinu Hutsi kani. A person stole a lulav. A lulav, I think we're familiar with from the holiday of Sukkot. So a lulav was stolen, and it was made into hutzi. Rashi on hutzi says, Shenoskan ola ola min ashedra. He detached the palm leaf, leaf by leaf, from the from its spine. I'm just assuming that all of our listeners are familiar with what a Sukkot lulav looks like. It's the if you're familiar with the palm tree growth, and the every season the palm tree increases in size and height, and at the in the middle of the palm tree there emerges the what we call the lulav, which is the eventual palm branch, but in its closed form, where the leaves are tightly compacted, attached to the spine. So if the thief had stolen the lulav and detached the leaves from the spine, that is called kani. He acquires it. That's a significant change. The mikora luliva mikri v'hashta hutzi. And as we saw before in Rashi in the previous discussion, the issue of shinui Hashem appears to be a matter of emphasis here, where even though we're seeing examples of physical change, that's not enough to be grounds for acquisition. You need to have a change in the identity, in the name, i.e. identity of the item. So in this case, originally, before the leaves are detached, it's called a lulav. With the leaves detached, they are referred to by a different term, hutzi. Hutzi v'avdinu chufya kani. If the thief had stolen detached palm leaves and made them into chufya. Chufya, Rashi first gives you a French word, and he says, sheboi mechabdin es abayis. It's what you mechabdin is a term meaning sweeping. We would call a broom. He made a palm leaf broom. But how is that made? And here Rashi adds very importantly, the chile kol utzu lishnayim. Each leaf is split into two. This is split into two along its length. The su lo hodra. That's a type of change that doesn't return. It's a permanent change. So that if a thief stole hutzi and then made them into chufya, into a broom, kani, that is a means of acquisition. Mekora hutzi v'hashta chufya. It starts off by being referred to as hutzi, and now it's referred to as a broom. Once again, what we're seeing here, in light of much of what we've discussed since the beginning of the perek, we're seeing an interesting phenomenon. We're seeing where there's a physical, permanent change, and that doesn't seem to be enough to constitute shinui kani, a type of shinui that results in change, but there has to be additionally a change in the name, in the identity of the item. Well, the points we're making, we're making them for thinking, for food for thought, as they say. But there's tremendous amount of discussion in the commentaries regarding these matters. Boy Rav Papa, Nechluka HaTioimis Mahu. Someone stole a lulav, and the tioimis got split. The term tioimis itself is the subject of discussion in Maseches Sukkah. For our purposes, we'll just go with Rashi over here. Rashi says the tioimis is kaf toimer emtsoi ha'ilyon tioimis hi. It would be the middle leaf, the part of the lulav that extends beyond the spine, we'll call the tioimis. And that tioimis, that leaf, it gets split. That's and the question now is, the lulav that was stolen, and now it's tioimis is split. What is the din regarding shinui kaine? The new marking that you see, a volcano shape, which also is accompanied by a Roman numeral marking, represents, we're reading from the side of the Gemara, these are shnei lishonos, two versions, kedei lanos la'shela, nechloka tioimis shel lulav, ayim nechshav shinui kedei liknos, a split tioimis of lulav, is that considered a significant enough change, whereby we would say it's kuni, it's acquired by the thief, and he would then pay cash for the original lulav. Haim yesh lulmoi mi mitzvah lulav. Shall we learn from the mitzvah of lulav, where the halacha says the nitla hatiyumis posel? The halacha says if the tiyumis part of the lulav is nitla, removed, it renders the lulav unfit for mitzvah use. So now we turn back to the Gemara. Ta Shema, Diomar Rabbi Mosun, Omar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Nitlo HaTioimis Posel. If the Tioimis is removed from a mitzvah, a lulav mitzvah, or that means a lulav used for the mitzvah, it renders it unfit. And we continue at the top of Omid Beis. My lav, is it not so hu adin lenechlika, that the same would apply to nechlika? And Rashi at the top says, my love, who adin lenechlo the cave unto the inyan psum. If a mitzvah lulav has its tumas split, it too becomes unfit for the mitzvah. So, leinyan miknanami shinuhi vekani, we would say that regarding acquisition, that too would be grounds for calling it a shinui and unfit. So the Gemara says, lo, nitla shiny. The case of nitla is different. In the case of nitla, it's rendered unfit, and we can agree that in the case of nitla, that would be considered a shinoi vis-a-vis laws of theft. However, that's different than the case of nechlika. Why? Because in the case of nitla, the chosr law means it's absent. It's simply not there anymore. Not so in the case of a lulav whose tiumis was nechlika. It's all there. It's simply split, but it's of course still attached. That would not necessarily be grounds for saying koni ika di amri. Now our second version. Toshma, the Omer of Moshe Amr Shuvan Levi. Nechlika hatiyomis nase kimi shenitla u pasul shma mina. That nechlika, the split tiyomis, is like the case of the removed tiyomis, and in both cases there it's pasul, and therefore it would be a basis of, even the case of nechlika would be a basis of acquisition. Shma mina indicates that this is conclusive. We continue in the Gemara with a new marking, the triangle. Immediately, of course, you see bow ties, but that's, you see, it's number 3. We've already explained the bow tie marking. So on the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, Hasidra Khan, the series that we see here, is Sheinik Sas Mehada Fib Omid Aleph. It appears a little different than that which we saw in Omid Aleph. V'lachein Rav Papa Mesuman with a triangle. Therefore, Rav Papa has a triangle around his name. The Kana Digmois Hinam. Here, the examples are where Lukachas Choymer, where some material is taken, V'litzar Moitzar, then some product is made. And then take that we'll say that improved or that new item, and then return it to its original state. And it's upon us to clarify laws or the outcome regarding the change in all directions. And you'll see what we mean by that by going through the examples. So that as far as the bow tie is concerned, we're continuing with that. As we indicated at the beginning of this discussion, we're dealing with things that are stolen and undergo change. Now the Gemara, Omar Rav Papa, Haiman de Gozal Afro Mechavre, a thief stole dirt from his friend, the Avde Leventa, and processed it into a brick. So you went from dirt to a brick. Lo koni, no acquisition. My taima. Why does that not constitute a shinui, a change that would result in acquisition? The hadar mashvi le afro, because it can be restored or returned to its original state. So that here, once again, we see an interesting phenomenon of something that during the, we'll say, the interim period, it certainly underwent a major change, but both a physical change and a change in name. But that's not enough. If it's a change that can be reversed to its original state, it's therefore considered lo koni. It's not sufficient to constitute a means of acquisition on the part of the thief. Leventa, a brick was stolen, the Avde Afra, and it was crushed, it was pulverized, and restored to its dirt form. Koni, that does represent acquisition. My Amris, what might you argue in to counter that? Dilma hodar v'ovid le leventa, that it can be restored into a brick? Well, if that be the case, hai leventa achriti hu, that would be a different brick. Uponim chadoshes bo lekan, that new or restored brick would be literally like a new face has appeared. It's a new entity. What do you mean by that? What's the difference between restoring a brick into a brick as opposed to restoring dirt to be returned to dirt? So the answer is that in the case of something that started out as dirt, that was the stolen item, and it's then restored to dirt. Dirt is dirt. There's no consideration regarding size, shape, etc. However, when an original stolen item is a brick, and it's then spoken of in terms of restoring it from an interim stage of dirt back to a brick, that newly formed brick is not the exact same dimension as the original brick. And that change is reason enough for saying that the brick stolen, made into dirt, the thief will acquire it as dirt. That's a change. And the fact that you can speak, that you might speak in terms of making it back into a brick, that's ponem chadosh. That already be a new brick. That's not the original item that was stolen. And hence, this is a case where koni. V'yomar ha-papa, ha'iman de-gozal nasko mechavrei. A person stole a bar of silver from his friend. Now, a bar of silver, its significance, its value is in terms of the silver content. Let's not confuse this with a case of a brick used for building, where in the case of a brick used for building, the main consideration is the dimension, the size, the form, the exactness of its shape. A nasco, a bar of silver, is its significance is the fact that it has a certain silver content. So someone stole a nasco mechavre v'ovid zuzi, and then made it into coins. Lo koni, the fact that it was made into coins doesn't indicate acquisition. my taima. Why is that not? After all, it's a very significant seeming change. Answer, Chodar Ovid Luhu Naska. The coins can be reformed, melted down, reformed into a bar of silver. Now, the other way around, Zuzi Vavdinu Naska, a man stole coins, melted the coins down into a Naska, Koni. That does represent acquisition. The Chitema Hodar Ovid Luhu Zuzi, you might argue, why should that be a change? The melted down bar of silver can be restored into coins. Ponim Chadoshos Bo'olakan. Those coins don't resemble the original stolen coins. And therefore, it's considered a Shinui. Shchimi V'Avdinu Chadati. Coins that were tarnished. Shchimi is a dark in color, black. Rashi says, Shchurim ken yishonim. They were black, looking like something old. And he then whitened them. Rashi says, Shilibna. So something that was coins that were blackened, tarnished, that he shined up. Lo koni. That does not constitute acquisition. Chadati v'avdinu shchimi koni. However, if you stole new coins and you tarnished them, koni, that would be a means of acquisition. V'chitema hoder ovid luhu chadati. You might say they can be repolished, shined into looking new again. Not so. May the yadiyah shichmayu. That interim stage of their having been tarnished or blackened will still be recognizable. Therefore, if you stole shiny new coins and blacken them in the interim, that would be a significant change. They're never going to become as shiny as, we'll say, proof-looking for those who have some connection to the numismatic world, understand what a proof-quality coin is. That cannot be restored. The Mishnah said, "Zeh haklal kol hagazlonim mishalmin kishas hagzela." Very often, when Mishnayos present points of law in a zeh haklal form, this is a rule. Something is being included in that rule. So the Gemara asks, "La suyemai, what are you coming to include?" The rule being that all cases of theft pay in accordance with the value at the time of the theft. Lasuye, we come to include Ha Diomar Reb Ilah, that which Reb Ilah teaches. Gonav Tlev Enasa Ayel, a thief stole a lamb, and it turned into a ram. It matured and became a ram, an adult animal. Arigel Venasa Shor, a person stole a calf and it became an ox. Naasa Shinu Biyada V'Kono, that constitutes a shinui in the possession of the thief, and he thereby acquires. So that it's true he stole a lamb, but now it's an adult sheep, it's an adult ram. The Mishnah says he'll pay the value of a lamb to the victim. Now, at this point, if that thief tovach umochar, he slaughters the adult version or sells it. Shelohu toveach, shelohu mocher. It is said that the thief is then slaughtering his own animal or selling his own animal. And as a result of that, the payment of four or five that we know the Torah demands in the case of a theft followed by a subsequent sale or slaughtering of the stolen animal, that won't apply over here. The halacha of four or five applies when the animal that was stolen is that which the thief subsequently slaughtered. But in this case, he stole the child version. Once it becomes adult in the possession of the thief, it's no longer viewed as the stolen item. It's a new thing. And therefore, the subsequent theft or slaughter or sale does not generate the additional 4-5 payment. It's, as the Gemara says, at that point it's called that he's slaughtering or selling his own animal. Hahu gavra, the Gozal Padno the Turi Mechavrei. The word Padno at the end of the line means a pair. So it was a man that stole a pair of Turi, of oxen, Mechavrei, from his friend. Ozal Korav Bu Karbo. He used this pair of oxen to plow his field. He used the stolen oxen to plow his field. Zora Bu Zara. He then planted his field. L'sof Adrinu L'morei. And then he returned the stolen animals to their owner. Also l'kamei to Rav Nachman. The case came to Rav Nachman. Omar Lahu. Rav Nachman says to them, Zilu Shomu Shvocha D'Ashbach. Go and evaluate the value of the improvement. In other words, there's a field that is now has now risen in value because of its being plowed and planted. And the expectation behind Rav Nachman's request is that the thief will pay the owner of the oxen that improvement, increased value that he's enjoying. Omar Le Rava. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, Turi Ashbach, Aro, Lo Ashbach. Are you saying that the improvement is because of the oxen and not because of the land itself? Now, the land itself is land that the thief owned legitimately. His offense is only with regard to the theft of the oxen. So why are you, Rav Nachman, saying that the thief has to pay for the improved, increased value that he's experiencing when the land of the thief itself, the nutrients in the land, the subterranean water supply of the land, whatever, the land has its own powers of improvement. Omar, so Rav Nachman said, Mikwamino Nishaimu Kule, did I say to make an evaluation of the entire improvement and that full amount is to be paid by the thief to the owner of the oxen? Palgu Kwamina, half. So that if the improved value is $100 of improvement, the thief will pay to the owner of the oxen $50. Omar Le, Rava asks, Sof Sof, Gizelahu Vekahodra Biena. Sof Kosof, you're dealing with an act of theft which is returned as it is. Disnan, Kohagazlona Mishaman Kishasagzela. All matters of theft are atoned for or are compensated for by the return of the item. And here, oxen were stolen. Oxen are returned. Omar Le, so Rav Nachman says, listen, you, Rava, are attempting to challenge my ruling, aren't you? Lo aminoloch, didn't I tell you once, ki yasivna bedina, when I'm in the midst of judging an actual case, lo tamo limidi, don't say anything to me. In other words, keep quiet. The Omar Huna Chavron Aloi, Huna, our colleague, Huna is Rav Huna, the great Rav Huna, a recognized Godol Hador, he said about me, Ano v'shover malka achi bedina. I, Rav Nachman, and Shover Malka. Shover Malka is a, literally, King Shafur was a Persian monarch. But it's an expression used to refer to Shmuel, the great Amora Shmuel, who was from the first generation of Amoroim, who was known to be an expert in monetary matters. I, Rav Nachman says, I and Shavur Malka, according to Rav Huna, are brothers, are equals in judgment. In other words, what are you speaking of? You're trying to challenge my rulings. You don't understand something. Hi, Inish, this guy, the guy that stole the oxen, Gazlona Atiko, who is an old-time thief, he's a repeat thief. Uboino Diknesenim, my intention was to impose a fine upon him. So that your questions are questions based on, we'll say, letter of the law. But there are times that matters aren't judged just simply according to letter of law. That might be fine and good for a first-time offender, but in order to deter a person from continuing his wayward behavior, we have to impose a fine upon him. And hence, in addition to returning the oxen, it was necessary for me to rule that he has to participate he has to share in the improvements and pay for a portion of them to the owner of the oxen. The Mishnah, Gozal, Behemo v'izkino, Avodim v'izkino, Mishalem k'shasak zela. This is, of course, we've seen quoted in recent Dapim. A person stole an animal and it literally aged, means it weakened. Avodim, he stole slaves and they likewise became weakened. The thief is to pay k'shasak zela according to their value at the time of the theft. Rabbi Meir Oimer Bavodim Oimer Lo Hareshel Cholofanecha. When it comes to the theft of slaves, there the thief has the benefit of simply giving back the weakened slave. Rashi points out that this follows the opinion that slaves are viewed as land. We've learned in previous Shurim. And you can see it quoted right here in the Mishnah that the Tanakama, the Rabbanan, disagree with Rabbi Meir, linking together Avodim with the Behema, and that they are not viewing the slaves as land with regard to this halacha. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, views slaves as land, and we say Karka Einu Nigzelis, land is not something that's subject to what's called conventional theft. When it comes to a matter of theft of land, and the owner comes and to retrieve his land, he simply takes back the land. So too, according to Rabbi Meir, slaves are compared to land. Take back the slaves. Gozal matbea v'nistak peros v'irkivu yayin v'hichmitz. We've broken this section of the Mishnah into two parts, Roman numeral 1 and 2. This breakdown will be quite significant for the discussion later in the Gemara, Mirtzah Hashem, in our next shir, we'll have a chance to get into this. Here, what's described is the theft of a coin, and it nistak, became cracked. It's as such, you would Rashi calls this a shinu hanikrhu. It's a recognizable shinui. However, the Bach, he comments on this. We'll leave the Bach comment aside for right now. Let us make the assumption, though, that a cracked coin is basically useless as a coin. Peros v'irkivu, a person stole fruits and they rotted. Yayin v'hichmitz, wine that went sour. Mishalem k'shas hagzela, the thief has to pay according to the value at the time of the theft. This ruling of pay according to the time of theft would indicate that the items in their current state are useless. Matbea v'nifsal, however, this is a different scenario. A coin was stolen and it was declared by the government non-current. Nifsal literally means it was rendered unfit, but there's no physical change. Truma v'nitmes, a thief stole truma, that's the tithe that's given to kehanim, and it became defiled. As such, the kohen cannot eat what he originally would have been able to eat as truma. However, again, there's no physical change. Defilement is something of a spiritual nature. Chometz v'orvel of HaPesach, or chometz was stolen. A loaf of bread was stolen before Pesach. The week of Pesach went by. Now, after Pesach, that is forbidden to eat. That's called Chometz She'ovar Lava Pesach. No, there's no physical change. It's a matter of time that passed. But the bread is useless. Behemo v'nis avdo bo avera. An animal was stolen, and it was used in a sinful fashion. Rashi says, v'nevdo bo avera, near Bas, it was used in bestiality, o nevdo. Or became unfit to serve as a sacrifice. That's the next example in the Mishnah. It became unfit to serve as a sacrifice because a blemish developed. Or an animal was judged for execution because of having killed a person. Omer lo hare shelcha lefanecha. The thief can say, take it back as it is. So what's common to all of these examples where the thief is saying, take it back, here, take your thing back, even though right now the item being returned is valueless, nevertheless, there's no obvious change, there's no physical change. So that what was stolen is that which is. The halachic changes spoken of is in the realm of things that are not nikur. I wanted to make a reference to a Bach comment earlier. I really should have emphasized this Bach comment, Ois Vov. Rashi, on the point of the animal dismissed from qualification as a sacrifice because of a blemish, so Rashi says, "Mum she'ein nikur." It's not visible. It's not noticeable. So the Bach in Ois Vov says, "B'mum afal pi she'nikur," even if it is noticeable, "B'dukin shebayin," where there's the type of mum spoken of as a scratch on the eye. It becomes disqualified to serve as a sacrifice. Nevertheless, it's the thief is able to say, "Hare shelcha lefanecha." And now the Gemara, Omar of Papa, lo hizkino hizkino mamish. The term hizkino literally means aged. Rav Papa says the Mishnah is not talking about something that literally aged. Ela filu kachashop, even if it became weakened. V'ho'anan hizkino tanan, but the Mishnah uses the term aged. The Gemara answers, Amri, kachasha, it really means weakened, kagon hizkino, like a case of aging. The lo hodar bori, it's a type of weakening that's permanent. It doesn't return to its original healthy state. Just like an animal that ages doesn't become young again. Omerle mar kshisha brei d'Rav Chisda d'Ravashi. Thusly, we say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu, and now do note the markings, the emphasis, name-wise. The following is said, we say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, we're going to say something that might sound familiar. What is said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? Afilu gonav, even if someone had stolen a lamb and it became a ram, it became an adult version. He stole a calf and it became the adult version, an ox. The change is a significant change and he becomes the owner of it. Let me point out that there's a kafel payment, a double payment. We didn't mention this earlier. But a kafel payment is made for the double value of the lamb, double value of the calf. The change into adulthood that takes place in the domain of the thief constitutes a shinui, and he acquires the animal. So that in terms of penalty, he'll pay a double value of the young version. Tavahu mochar. If the thief then goes and either slaughters or sells the adult version of that which he had, the adult version, meaning the animal in its adult state after having stolen it when it was a mere baby, if he now slaughters it or sells it, shelohu toveach, shelohu mocher, he's viewed as slaughtering or selling his own animal. And there will be no additional 4-5 payment that is usually the case when a stolen animal is slaughtered or sold. Omar Le, Rav Ashi, who just heard this, as was said over by Mor Kshisha, Rav Ashi says to Mor Kshisha, Lav Aminoloch, did I not tell you, Lo Tachlif Gavri, don't switch names around. Hahu mishmei de Rabbi Ilah Itmar. That which you just said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan was really said in the name of Rabbi Ilah. And of course, the arrows that you see to the side of the Gemara text are meant for you to align each line with the arrow. And if you work your way backwards, you see the immediately preceding arrow had the Rabbi Yochanan featured, Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan, and the arrow above, toward the end of the narrow lines, you see an additional arrow. There is where you saw Rabbi Elah teaching this point. And that's what Rav Ashi wanted to point out, that this teaching of Gonav, Tlev, and Asayel, etc., is a teaching that was said originally, or what was said exclusively by Rav Elah, and not necessarily by Rabbi Yochanan. We continue in the Gemara, Rabbi Meir Oimer, Be'avodim Oimer Lo Hare Shelcha Lefanecha. We saw Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah, and we pointed out that Rabbi Meir viewed Avodim, even though it's a case of the Eved that had been stolen, underwent the change of his Kina, which we explained means weakening. The thief is able to say Hare Shelcha Lefanecha, like in a case of land that is stolen. Omar Rav Chanina Bar Avdimi, Omar Rav, Halacha Kerebi Meir. Namely, that you say Hare Shelcha Lefanecha, like you would treat land. The Gemara asks, V'Rav, and here we have a new marking, so let's turn to the side of the Gemara, in the margin where our Nosei Mivneh heading appears. The house shape represents Sidra Shukushas, a series of questions. Kedei Levara Loma Rav Posak L'Chayru Rabbi Meir. Why did Rav choose to rule like Rabbi Meir? Mashmol Shitas Rabbi Meir the Eved Kikarka. Rabbi Meir's Shita indicates that a slave is viewed as we would view land. But why does Rav choose to paskin, to rule like Rabbi Meir, when there was an opinion of the Rabbanon, the majority opinion, disagreed? So let's turn back to the Gemara. For Rav Shofik Rabbanon Vavid Ki Rabbi Meir, does Rav abandon the Rabbanon in favor of Rabbi Meir? Amri, the Gemara answers, Mishum de Braisa Ibchotanya. There is a Braisa, another Tanaic source, that appears in the opposite form, namely, where the Chachomim say, when it comes to Avodim, Hare Shel Cholofonecha. So we have an opposite form, namely, the opinion of the Rabbanon is the same as Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah. So Rav's ruling was really a ruling like the Rabbanon in a Braisa. The focus being on, like, bottom line is that Rav is ruling that an Eved is like Karta. The Gemara asks, V'Rav Shovik Masnisin V'Ovid Kebraisa, does... Are you saying then that Rav abandons a Mishnah? A Mishnah is viewed as something of greater authority, greater significance than a Braisa, even though a Braisa is also part of the body of Tanaic literature. Mishnayos have more significance. So is Rav abandoning the Mishnah, abandoning the Mishnah to follow the Braisa? In other words, according to the Mishnah, The Rabbanon would not allow you to say by Avodim Hare Shelcha Lefanecha. So why is Rav abandoning the Rabbanon in the Mishnah to follow the Rabbanon in a Braisa? The Gemara says, Rav Masnisin Nami Ibcha Toni. Rav happens to switch around the Mishnah as well. In other words, Rav switches around the Mishnah to resemble the Braisa. And if you say that, then the Rabbanon are in our Mishnah too, saying, by Avodim Haresha Cholofonecha. Question, Umay Dochake de Rav de Apich Masnisen Mekami de Braisa? What forces Rav to switch around the Mishnah in order to align it with the Braisa? Adarabba, to the contrary, Nepuch le Braisa Mekami Masnisen. Switch around the Braisa to accommodate, to align with the Mishnah. The Gemara answers, number one, Amri, we answer, Rav Nami Masnisen Ibcho Asne. It's not that Rav switched around the Mishnah. Rav was taught the Mishnah by his rabbis, by his predecessor, by his rabbis, in an opposite version. It's not, once again, Rav isn't switching anything around. Rav simply is is ruling by Avodim, Harei Shelech Avonecha, in accordance with the Rabbanan in the Mishnah version that he was taught. The Gemara continues, V'iboy Esema, another approach to appreciating Rav in paskining, in ruling by Avodim, Harei Shelech Avonecha, V'iboy Esema, Ki Lo Apich. When would we say that Rav is not to switch around a Mishnah to be like a Braisa? Chada Mekami Chada, if it's one for one, meaning one against one, a Mishnah versus a Braisa. So you're not going to switch a singular Mishnah to align with a singular Braisa. However, Chada Mekami Tarti Apich. If it's a question of one Mishnah versus two Braisa sources, then Rav will switch around the Mishnah. Desanya. We should point out that the second Braisa in which the Chachomim are presented will be presenting Avodim like Karka. Once you present Avodim like Karka, we understand that in the case of the theft of a slave and he undergoes depreciation, the thief can still say Hare Shelcha Lefanecha. We have a little starred note before we continue, and on the side we've written Yesh La'ir. We want to point out the Hatam Sheviu Braisazu, the reason for bringing in this source, the following source, Biglal Soifai Hamekuvkov. We're interested in that which appears toward the end of the source, the dashed underlined part, the katoni, where it says, "V'chachomim omrim ein nishboyen al ho'avodim." They will make a point that when it comes to the need for swearing in court, one will not swear over a claim concerning slaves, just like one does not swear concerning claims concerning land. This halacha of land matters not being subject to oaths in court is a function of laws derived from psukim. But what are we to see from this? We see that the Rabbanan, the Chachomim, in this, we'll call this the second Tanaic source, the second Braisa, presents slaves like land. So that you have this, we'll call the second Braisa, plus you have a Braisa that had the information of our Mishnah, but in a reversed form, name-wise, two Braisas then that have the Chachomim saying by that Avodim are viewed as land. So that it's true in our Mishnah, only you have Rabbi Meir making that presentation, but you have two Braises where the Chachomim are the ones making that presentation. So for Rav to rule thusly doesn't constitute some type of, we'll say, earth-shattering departure from standard halachic procedures. Let's now read the source, which is a Braisa representing a second a situation which the Rabbanan present Avodim as Karka. And as a result, in a case of theft, you would be able to say Reisha Chalofanecha. I just want to point out, I think maybe it's obvious, but the source we're about to read does not deal with a case of theft, but it does illustrate the way one views Avodim in the halachic realm. So what does it say in this source? Desanya hamachlif pora b'chamor v'yolda. A switch is made between an owner of a cow interested in acquiring a donkey and vice versa. So in the interim, the cow gives birth. Who's the owner of the calf? It's not clear. V'chein ha-moicher shivchos v'yolda. A person sold his heathen bondmaid, and she gave birth. One claims, it gave birth in my domain while I was still in possession of it. Balo Shosek, and the other party remains quiet. So you have a case of one arguing from a standpoint of certainty. We call that Bori. And the other one who remains silent is as Rashi calls, is considered Shema. It's even less than that in this particular, because Shema means someone expresses a matter, the issue was doubtful. But here he's silent. So you have a person with this claim of certainty, another person remaining silent, Zocha Ba. He who makes his claim of certainty is entitled to keep the newborn, whether it's the calf or the baby in the case of the bondmaid. Once again, the case of a switch between two people wanting to acquire the other one's animal, Zeh and the birth, Zeh Omer Eini Yodea V'Zeh Omer Eini Yodea. Each one says, I don't know. I don't know if the birth took place while I still owned it or after you bought it. And the other party agrees, I don't know either. Yachloku, so they split the value of the item. Zeh Omer Brushusi V'Zeh Omer Brushusi. Each party claims with certainty it gave birth in my possession. The seller saying before the sale took place, it gave birth. And the buyer saying after the sale took place, it gave birth. Yishova ha-moicher shebrishusa yolda. The seller swears that it was in his possession that it gave birth. By the seller saying that, so he simply keeps the item. He doesn't hand it over. Shlefi, there's a rule. Shekol ha-nishpoyen shebetorah, those who take oaths in the Torah. In other words, when you have a controversy between two people, two opposite claims are being made, and the Torah speaks in terms of one party swearing to bolster his claim, which of the two parties will be the one to swear? The rule says all the nishboyin in the Torah, nishboyin are those that swear in the Torah, nishboyin v'lo mishamen. You would swear a type of oath and then not pay. So if you, let us say, in a case of a standard controversy between a one who borrowed money and one who lent money, and each one is arguing whether the loan has been paid up or not, who is going to swear? The borrower will swear. He swears. The result of the thing is now not needing to pay. You don't swear according to the Torah. On a Torah level, you don't make an oath. You don't swear and then collect. I say on a Torah level because in the realm of rabbinic law, that is subject to, we'll say, to change, to additional cases, to variations, etc. V'chachomim omrim, ein nishboyin, lo al avodim, v'lo al karkois. In this particular case, there was a case involving a bondmaid that gave birth. So regarding the bondmaid, you see there's a machlokis between Rebbe Meir, who says that the seller will swear that the bondmaid gave birth in his domain and keep the child. Of course, the bondmaid was part of the sale, so he sells the bondmaid, but the child he'll keep. That's called keeping and not paying out, not giving over. So this once again is a second Tanaic source which views avodim, which views slaves as land. And just like in the case of a land theft, the thief would say upon being charged by the court, the thief would say, Harei shelchof neva, here's your land, take it. So too in the case of a stolen eved, the thief says, even in the case of the eved depreciating, Harei shelchof neva. And Rav, when he issued his ruling at the beginning of the sugya, Rav he ruled in effect thusly. The only thing is that in the original statement, we have a little star, by the way, to the side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the star just above. The Gemara here asks, "Hi, halachik Rabbi Meir, halachik Rabbanan mi boyalei." Why is it that Rav is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Meir? If according to Rav, the Mishnah should be switched around, He had two brises that indicated that Eved is like Karka, that the Chachamim are the ones holding that. So, and as a result, Rav would have switched around our Mishnah, two brises overpowering the Mishnah. So you switch around the Mishnah. Who in the Mishnah then, according to Rav, is saying, by Avodah Mareshel Cholofanecha? It's the Rabbanon that are saying that. So the Gemara asks, "Hi, halacha k'Rabbi Meir, halacha k'Rabbanon mi boyalei." Rav should have said, "Halacha is like the Rabbanon." So the Gemara answers, "Hachi komar." Thusly, Rav said, or meant to say in his original statement, "Lamai da'afchisu v'tanisu." According to you, who have a switched around version, in other words, Rav says my version really has the Chachomim saying, by Avodam Harei Shel Cholofanecha, by stolen slaves that went down in value, the slave has the option of saying, take your slave back. But according to you that have the Mishnah switched around and have Rabbi Meir saying, by Avodam Harei Shel Cholofanecha, by your version, it's actually the version that we have in our printed Mishnah above, by your having that version that views Eved like Karka, so on your terms, I say halacha k'Rabbi Meir, meaning halacha like your version of Rabbi Meir. We continue at the top of Daf Tzadi Zion. You notice a new marking. We have a crown shape, and on the side, under our mivneh, the crown appears, and it will appear in alternating directions as we go through the Gemara. Kushyo, this is a ma'akav. A ma'akav means an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. With the points facing up, they represent kushyos, questions. Umi omar Rav, the avdi kimakakoi. Does Rav really hold that way, that slaves are viewed as land? And the inverted house marking, tshuvos, responses. So now the Gemara. And you'll notice we've tried to highlight that we have long questions, accompanied with a long answer in the middle. The Gemara, Umi Omar Rav Avdo Kimakar Koi Domi. Does Rav really hold that slaves are viewed in halachic terms like land? I know that we've said it already, but we'll just repeat ourselves. When we speak in terms of viewing it like land, what practical halachic nafgamina do we have, practical halachic application of that? Well, we saw one example would be in the case of the stolen slave that decreases in value, the slave can say Harei Shel Cholofanecha, just like in the case of stolen land. And as far as oaths being taken, just like on land oaths are not taken, so too over controversies concerning slaves there would be no oaths taken. But does Rav say all of that? Here we have Rav Daniel quoting Rav. Person who grabs his friend's slave and uses it for work purposes. The thief, the grabber, potter. Potter means he doesn't have to pay the slave owner any wages, any schar. If you say that slaves are viewed like land, why is there exemption? The slave is considered in the possession of the owner the whole time. Just like land is not something that's movable, it's permanently located where it is. You can't steal land in that sense of taking it into your possession, into your domain. So too the slave is viewed in halachic terms the same way, and that while you were using it, you were using a slave owned and in the domain of his owner, so to speak. Why is there no payment of schar? The Gemara answers, Hacha b'mayaskinan. In general, I will tell you that slaves are viewed as land. Here, what are we talking about? We spoke about someone grabbing someone else's slave. Shalom b'shas melacha. It's at a time that the slave wasn't going to do work anyway. So Rashi describes this. as ze nehne, someone, Mr. A benefits, and Mr. B doesn't lose out on anything. And now to continue with that idea of ze nehne vezelo choser, which is exempt. If I can benefit in it and it doesn't cause you any loss, why not? Live and let live. Let everyone enjoy themselves. Why should there be any payment? So we say, when you have a case like that of you benefiting and the other and not coming at the next guy's expense, you're exempt. Ki ha deshalach le Rabbi Abba le Mori bar Mor. Like Rabbi Abba sent to Mori. Boi minei miravuna. Rabbi Abba wanted Mori to ask a question of Rav Huna. What was the question that he wanted to ask? Hador b'chotzer chaveru shelo midaito. There's a courtyard, a piece of property that's not generally rented out, a non-rental property. And I come and dwell in that property without the knowledge of the owner. Tzorech la'alos lo yischar, o ein tzorech la'alos lo yischar. Does a fee have to be paid or not? V'sholchule, and an answer was sent back, eino tzorech la'alos lo yischar. No fee need be paid. So we see that in cases where one can benefit, and the other one, it's not coming at the expense of anyone else. No one else is losing out, so no payment is made. So just to go back to our main point, avdo kimakarkoi, slaves are viewed as land, and we thought that if it's viewed as land, so the slave that was stolen and used for work, you should pay the owner. It's you were using the owner's property. So we said, we answered, the slave is viewed as land. The reason for the exemption is because shaloi b'shas melacha. The Gemara asks, hachi hashta, how can you compare the case of dor b'chotzer chavero to our case of the slave that was used shaloi b'shas melacha? I understand there in the case of Dor b'chotzer chavero, the dweller in the other fellow's domain is exempt because in fact the dweller is causing benefit to the owner of that property. What's the benefit that he's causing? So there are two opinions on that matter. The Gemara goes through them. Bein lemandomar beiso meisva yosef nichole. We'll go over these points. The first opinion, Mandomar Beso, that's a house, Mesva Yosef, that is occupied. A piece of property, a house that's occupied, the occupant is actually benefiting the owner of the property that otherwise would have been unoccupied. How is that? The occupant, if he notices cracks are developing, he will fix them. He will seal them up. He will actually maintain the property. The property that otherwise may have depreciated. There's another opinion. The Mandomer says, Shia Yukashar. Shia Yukashar, Shia is the name of a demon. Yukas is to smash shar, literally smash the gates. A domicile that is unoccupied is actually invitation to this demonic force to ruin the property. Where does this demonic force appear? In a place that's unoccupied. So by having an occupant there, you're keeping this shade, this demon, away. So in both cases, or both according to both explanations, the owner of the property that you occupied benefits. So that's why there is no need to pay schar, no need to pay rental in that property. Of course, it was a non-rental property to begin with. The fact that it's occupied is beneficial to the owner. Elo acha. In the case of the slave that you overtook, Mi nicholei the nichush avdei? Is it to the advantage of the owner of the slave that his slave during, okay, granted, non-work hours, but he should be weakened? Amri, the Gemara answers, hochinami nicholei. In fact, in this case too, the owner is happy that you're using his slave during the slave's downtime, the lo listeri avdei, that his slave shouldn't learn the ways of dormancy. In Hebrew we say darke batola, the ways of batola. Batola is a person doing nothing. It's of value to the owner that his slave knows, gets used to the idea of always being active and not learning the ways of laziness. Here we have an incident. You'll notice we have a long marking. It's an incident that comes on the heels of the case of someone overtaking someone's slave. We call that the tokef. We saw in the second line from the top, tokef ba'avdei shechaveiro. Now the Gemara we have a long marking, so by all means take note of that. Bei Rav Yosef Bar Chama. In the family, the house of Rav Yosef, there was someone that extended a loan, or there were people that loaned out money from this household. So the members of the house of Rav Yosef, havu takif avdi de inchi de masik behu zuzi ve avdi behu malacha. People that borrowed money from them were subject to the following: that these lenders would take over slaves and use them for their own benefit. And we have to add here, we're talking about slaves of borrowers that eventually will pay up their debt. Omar le Rabba Bray, Rabba, the son of Rav Yosef, asks, my time over Marhochi, why is it that you allow for that, you do this? Omalei, so Rav Yosef answers, the Omer of Nachman, Avda Nahom Kresi Lo Shavi. Now, literally means a slave is not worth the bread that he eats. For our purposes, says, I'm not causing them, the owners, these borrowers, I'm not causing them any loss. Omar Le, Rabbo says back, Emo, granted, Yomar of Nachman, Rav Nachman would say such a statement, Kagon, Daru is a name, Daru Avde, like Daru, his own slave, the market Beikuvi. He, market is, he dances Beikuvi. He dances in bars. In other words, it's a type of a slave that what he does isn't really worth anything. Kulu avdi mevet avdi. However, all other slaves do things of value. So how is it that you're taking people's slaves, people that borrowed money from you, and they're going to pay up their debts, and you're using their slaves? Omalei, so Rav Yosef says, Anok Rav Daniel Svirali, I hold like Rav Daniel, the Omar Rav Daniel Barav, Ketino, Omar Rav, Hatokef Avdoi Shel Chaver Vyoso Boy Malocha Potter. Of course, we saw this earlier. If you, one who takes over someone else's slave and uses him for Malocha purposes, uses it for work, you're exempt, you don't have to pay. Almo, Nichole, the low listeri avde. As we saw earlier, as we saw and explained in the Gemara earlier, that's to the benefit of the owner. The owner is happy with this, that his slave should not learn the ways of idleness, of laziness and being idle. Idle, by it is I-D-L-E. The Gemara answers, or I should say, Rabba responds, "All Malay, Hani Mili." We can understand that particular approach that particular teaching. Hechodolo masik behuzuzi. That's when the person who's overtaking, who's taking over someone's slave, is not someone that had lent money. More, however, you, Rav Yosef, kevan de masik behuzuzi, you are someone that is collecting, ultimately collecting from them money, and they'll pay their debt in cash. They'll pay their debts up. Merci caribis. It appears to us as collecting interest. What do we mean by that? Well, in addition to the ultimate payment, you're also benefiting from the borrowers, the use of their slaves. Now, it's true that as far as the owner of the slave is concerned, he'd be happy with that his slave doesn't learn the ways of idleness. However, when you're dealing with the laws of ribis, there's an additional consideration, and that is what image does that create in the eyes of the public? And even beyond that, we'll see in a moment. The Omar of Yosef bar Menuhin, Omar of Nachman, Afal pi she'amru, even though we have said, we have taught, Hador b'chotzer chaveru shalom idaito ein tzorech la'alos lo schar. We saw this earlier in our discussion now, that one who dwells in someone else's domicile, unbeknownst to the owner, and it was a domicile that wasn't going to be rented out anyway, no payment need be made. However, if the owner of that domicile, of that courtyard, was a person that had borrowed money from you, you as the lender of the money are not entitled to benefit from the borrower's property for free. And there, why not? Because in addition to the borrower who owns that property, in addition to his paying you up for the loan, you're going to also have benefit, additional benefit, from having dwelt in his property. That's getting principal of loan back in the ultimate cash payment, plus the additional value of having enjoyed his property. That's what we called before merci caribis. It appears like an interest payment or collection of interest, which is strictly forbidden when you're dealing with loans. Amalei, so Rav Yosef, upon hearing all of this, he says, Hadri B, I reverse myself, I change, I'm going to have to stop that practice. And when it comes to people that I loaned money to, I will not use their slaves. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.